You're now tuned into the Fully Booked Podcast with Mace, French, and Pox. Enjoy the listen. Where to go? Tell me where to go. Use my inner voice. Tell me where to go. Tell me where to go.
Move on to the key lessons. The language of negotiation is primarily a language of conversation and rapport. A way of quickly establishing relationships and getting people to talk and think together. Which is why when you think of the greatest negotiators of all time, Oprah Winfrey. Who do you know personally that are good negotiators?
I don't know if I should name names, but yeah.
You don't have to name names if you don't.
Yeah, I do.
Say friend, family,
colleague. Friend. Yeah, definitely friend. That's a good negotiator. Yeah.
Do you want to give an example?
Oh, yeah. For instance, you lot go on Sunday with him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, because when I speak to him about some of the things, when he talks about certain things, like, the acquisition and stuff, mm-hmm. and I'm like, you're taking the piss mm-hmm. out of the other, like, you're taking the fact you really took, you know, you got them this far, led, then you're like, yeah, don't fancy unless you, knock off 20k, no, 20 bags. I'm like, bro, like, in my head, I'm like, you got no fucking heart.
I think he's told me of something before, and I could be wrong, but he's got them down so low, and then his woman's walked away. Walked away from the negotiation knowing that the person needs to sell, and then maybe got them even lower.
Yeah. So that's one person for sure. Because as I said, man will negotiate like a 50 quid here, 100 quid here. These are thousands we're talking about. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, that, and then, yeah, I'm trying to think. I must know other people, but straight away that person came to mind. Yeah. Just because when I've had conversation, I've even said to him, how do you do that? Like, you taking it anyway? I know, Mace. But like,
you can't use the same person.
Mm. No, to be fair, I didn't have an example, but I was just thinking about that as to, I guess when you're, let's say, buying a house, and when you're buying a house or when you're buying something, and I think you understand. It's only now you two. This person is only negotiating with you. Mm. So now this person doesn't have the wiggle room they had before. Whereas before they had previous offers, now it's just down to you two. Now this person, as in, the person who's offering to buy the house now has wiggle room to play games, you know, and in some respect, they can afford to walk away, you know? Hence, I guess, the ability to knock down the price or take the pee a little bit. But another example, I can't think of another example. Maybe everyone I know just gives in, boy. I can't think of one.
What about your mum? Does she not?
See, we're going way back. When you mentioned the example of your dad and the buying the clothes, like, I thought about my dad actually. And I thought, wow, like, I completely forgot those sort of things happened. You know what I mean? Mm. That would be a good example. If I know, my dad will be. Yeah. Like anything, really. Like, could be in the meat shop, or, you know what I mean? Just anything. Absolutely anything. Sometimes, in fact, it's almost. I find it a bit cringe. Like, yo, bro, can we just pay you and go?
Awkward, boy.
Can we just go? I'll pay you, boss. Don't worry. Yeah, there's me and I'm like, I'm also. My dad's willing to take the chicken and walk out without paying. Yo, he's done shit like that. Knowing that that's all part of negotiation for him.
Yeah. I've been in restaurants and then, like, certain times, like, when you're with a group and then you know that one person be like, I ain't paying the service charge. Didn't replace my napkin quick enough or something like that. And then it's like, I've seen him really go into detail on the bill. And I'm like, I don't even mind. I mean,
I'll cover it, man. Cool.
So, yeah, sometimes I've seen that shit, bro.
All right, so if you could, Mace, or whoever's got the.
Yeah.
If you go to page 47 and yeah. just read out the key points of that chapter.
Yeah, sure. Right, here are some key lessons from this chapter to remember. A good negotiator prepares going in to be ready for possible surprises. A great negotiator aims to use her skills to reveal the surprises she is certain to find. I didn't understand why I used her and she in that, but there you go. Must be the world we live in. Don't commit to assumptions. Instead, view them as hypotheses and use the negotiation to test them rigorously. I remember reading about that in the chapter and the fact that, you know, a man might... So like a, when I was in... My mum gave the example, I was in the food shop the other day. About three or four men walked in, youths, all black, not together, but separately, black hoodie, black this. I'm thinking, rad, these youths all dressed the damn same. But I'm just... And then I'm... In my head, things are working out. Okay, there must be... Actually, no. As the book says... Don't you assumptions? No, use that as like an hypothesis. But then, if you want to get to the assumption, ask the correct questions or ask the questions you think might lead you there. But never assume. People who view negotiation as a battle of arguments become overwhelmed by the voices in their head. Negotiation is not an act of battle; it's a process of discovery. The goal is to uncover as much information as possible. To quiet the voices in your head. Make your soul an all-encompassing focus the other person on what they have to say. Slow it down. Going too fast is one of the mistakes all negotiators are prone to making. If we're too much in a hurry, people can feel as if they're not being heard. You risk undermining the rapport and trust you've built. Put a smile on your face. When people are in a positive frame of mind, they think more quickly and are more likely to collaborate and problem solve instead of fight and resist. Positivity creates mental agility in both you and your counterpart. Did this section pick up the three different types of yeses or that later on in the book? All right.
Cool. Nice one. Chapter 3. Before we move on, was there anything that you wanted to mention? Or?
I know. I like that. I forget which point I like now, but I mean, I like that, that key summary. Mm. It was really interesting.
No, nothing from me.
Cool. Chapter 3. Don't feel their pain, label it. There is nothing more frustrating or disruptive to any negotiation than to get the feeling you're talking to someone who isn't listening. Playing dumb is a valid negotiation technique, and I don't understand is a legitimate response. But ignoring the other party's position only builds up frustration and makes them less likely to do what you want. The opposite of that is tactical empathy. That's on page 51. Have you used silence as a weapon or has it been used on you? And how was both responses?
So what was the second one?
Second one what?
Sorry, if you use silence as a weapon and...
Has it been used on you?
Okay.
Silence can be a motherfucker, I'm not going to lie, when it's been used on man. I'm trying to think for example, but I know someone's just dead silent. You're like, we ain't got nothing to say. You know what I'm saying? Unless one of them, you ain't got nothing to say. Silence can be a motherfucker. I'm just trying to think if I've been... I don't think, so I kind of take it sometimes as silence is almost a sign of being rude and not respectful. So I tend to will respond back personally. But I know when it's been used on me. It's long. Sometimes someone rambles onto you. You start giving a response and they walk off. That really wants you want to lick someone down. Because I just think it's the art of disrespect. Like, how do you get to express all these views? I've stood there like a damn shield in battle, taking it, yeah? Taking it. And I'm about to fire back and you just walk, and you just walk away. Mocking, innit?
Yeah.
Silence is a motherfucker. Trust me, it's a killer, that one. Silence, if you say you just pour everything out and you get silence back, it's a mockery. There you go.
I have used it on someone. Yeah, I have used it on someone. I'm trying to think. Well, no, I know that one. I'm trying to think of the former because that's the one I thought I would have experienced that before. Have I used it on anyone? Has anyone used it on me? Certainly not in recent time. I'm sure someone has used it on me before. Again, I'm quite weak in regards to those things. You know, I'll probably start buzzing someone, you know, trying to get like some form of response. As to using it on someone, I think we were having an exchange and... I even say this, it was a case of like it didn't matter what I said. I was in the wrong. You know what I mean? So I just didn't say nothing. Then it was a case of, aren't you going to say nothing? But there was nothing to say. If I would respond, then, you know, I'm in the wrong again. So I didn't feel the need to respond. Then there came like almost like a balance of, okay, cool, let's have a proper conversation. Mm. That's actually not necessarily myself, actually, as to giving someone the silent treatment. I just felt I had no choice. Didn't make sense to talk or to respond.
What about when it was used on you?
Actually, I don't have an example of that, but again, with those, or certainly with that, I think I'd become a bit uncomfortable, and I think I'd begin making assumptions as to either issues. Yeah, I begin making assumptions. That's what I think anyway.
So tactical empathy is understanding the feelings and mindset of another in the moment and also hearing what is behind those feelings, so you increase your influence in all the moments that follow. It's bringing our attention to both the emotional obstacles and potential pathways to getting an agreement done. It's emotion intelligence on steroids. Most of us enter verbal combat unlikely to persuade anyone or anything because we only know and care about our own goals and perspective. But the best officers are tuned into the other party, their audience. They know that if they emphasize, they could mold their audience by how they approach and talk to them. If this is true, how do you think police matters in the local community would change if they were properly trained with such a tool?
So I was going to ask you to repeat it, but I was...
No, I know the question. I'm just trying to think how... If they had the training, like, how... How would it affect...
Oh, okay. I think I get it now. Okay, cool. begs the question. So what type of training are they doing?
Mm, exactly. All
right. Let me start making assumptions. I'm joking. no, I'm not going to make assumptions, but I'm going to answer, I'm gonna answer the question. So I was going to say there'll be a bit more critical thinking, like as to... Oh, so you know how we were talking about, I think you, so one of your questions was, I think very similar to EQ and IQ and as to responding. Mm-hmm. I think if they're the one asking the question, I'm the one responding. I think it'll require me to think a bit more about my response. More often than not, for example, when there are issues obviously in the community with the police, mm-hmm. a lot of the responses are quite emotional. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they'd gone about that type of training, then... I think I'd slow down in my emotional thinking and have to start thinking a bit more critically and start using IQ and respond according to the question. Mm-hmm. And I guess they'd get a lot further if they were doing that, but mm-hmm. I guess, well, that's not the case. Good question.
Cool, good.
What are you lot doing in there?
Exactly.
I haven't got much further to add, to be fair. Just, yeah, I think, especially when it comes to police, there's definitely a thing that, for me, there needs to be more training on cultural diversity as well. Because, like, we've all grown now to an age and in and around age group where we've got, there's so many different ethnicities that we have mixed with that I feel like we can go into any kind of ethnic group and have some kind of rapport. We might not
similarly,
be
like, but they
dogs, but you know what I mean? Like we can, you know what I'm saying? There's some kind of relatable or something. And sometimes part of that is not evident within the police force, but that's slightly different and off topic.
Isn't it mad? I think I saw a video recently of a policeman playing basketball in...
I saw that, yeah.
Like, and some
in
people...
In a school or something.
Yeah, something like that. And people are like, oh, wow. Bro, like, these are... It's not like rocket science, mm-hmm. you know, as to things they can do to... I don't want to say make inroads in the community, but just to, well, yeah, let me just use that word, just to make inroads in the community. And this is not trying to knock the police in any way, shape or form. I guess, like, my question is, like, what are they, like, what type of training are they doing? You know, as to then them being on the road, because obviously there's those who, I don't say walk the streets, but you get my point. And then there's those who are maybe solving... I don't know, higher or bigger crimes, you know, and when they are faced with those crimes, what form of communication are they undertaking Like, yeah, because more often than not, the communication is just mad friction. Mm. Even like things with like stop and search. That's not even one I was going to use actually. But what's the one when we were younger? When they used to pull us over. Isn't there a word for it? Anyway, when they'll pull us over when we're driving, you know, and when we're younger. But straight away, that's a, like a immediate one is like where we become quite stone and cold. You know what I mean? It's like one word answers-ish and all that type of stuff, you know, and almost like wait to... I was going to say like we wait to respond or not. Anyway, I think you get my point anyway. Mm. Yeah, it's just an uncomfortable relationship.
Yeah, so... Yeah, they do some EQ training, to say the least.
I'd love to know what they do. Like, not even digging them out. I'd just like to know.
No. I mean, we pay their wages.
I mean, they may not see it like that, but yeah.
I mean, if you're a taxpayer, you mm-hmm. So it's not really, it's a fact.
Yeah, it's not debatable, I know.
It is what it is. When we closely observe a person's face, gestures and tones of voice, our brains begin to align with their with theirs in a process called neural resonance, and that lets us know more fully what they think and feel. If you want to increase your neural resonance skills, take a moment right now and practice. Turn your attention to someone who's talking near you, or watch a person being interviewed on TV. As they talk, imagine that you are that person. Visualize yourself in that position they describe, and put in as much detail as you can, as if you could, if you were actually there. Are you able to put yourself in other people's shoes with no immediate connection?
Yes and no. You know, sometimes you might see something, you might feel a bit, you mentioned earlier, cringe or awkward for them when something's, you're like, ooh, or it could be like, something happened. So someone that I work with at my second job, this actually brought a tear to my eye, yeah? So basically, there was a family bereavement for that happened, and his family lives abroad. So he flew abroad, and then he got a phone call whilst he was abroad that his fiance and unborn child had passed away. So he flew abroad because someone else had passed away, and he got a phone call whilst abroad that his fiance and unborn child had passed away. So he's come back to work, and I knew about that he flew abroad. The person who died abroad was his mum. So I knew that about that, and I knew that's why he was off work for so long. So when he come back and I spoke to him and I said, my condolences, he goes, what have you heard? Then he told me the rest. I was devastated for the guy, like devastated for him, absolutely devastated for him, like proper, he was crying his eyes out, everything. This is a big guy, he's like probably your size, he's big, right? And then like he was just like, hugged him, and I was just like, yeah, he's telling me other stuff. Like, I was just like, I can't even fathom. Like, I'm trying to put myself in your position. I can't fathom that, but I just felt like my proper belly went, everything. Do you get what I'm saying? Because that's stuff that's not normal to happen. You're just like, yo, my whole life gone. Like, my mom obviously was one thing, but I have my life here. Like, I'm in the UK. My fiance and unborn child. I just get a call that they're both gone. Do you get what I'm saying? Mad. So that was a big one. That was a big one, man.
I've gotten that one. Sorry. Jesus Christ. So they just took me there as well. I was going to say something like working in schools, but the example was chalk and cheese.
No, but it could be.
Similar. No, very similar. No. So I was thinking, obviously, when working in schools, I think more often than not, when working the behaviours, you have to kind of like put yourself in the shoes of the person. I don't want to say who feels aggrieved, but you have to put your shoes. Well, sometimes I feel sometimes you have to put yourself in the shoes of the student as to how they feel, because I think you need to talk to their needs. Although you're the authoritarian, I think they like to be understood. Mm. So there are times when dealing with learners, I want to call them children, I like to put myself in their shoes. And actually, even with riders, actually, there are times when I have to put myself in their shoes. And the reason why I say that, there was a question I think you asked before, French. I forget which one. I think it must have been to do with, obviously, negotiation. Where I think it was only on Friday where I think she had just come from a funeral, actually. I asked her how her day was. She said, oh yeah, I've just come from a funeral. She said, I didn't want to tell you that actually, because I didn't want to bring that energy into the car. And then as the ride went on, she told me she had more than one stop, which would have taken the price obviously higher. But at that point I was like, no, so we were going to right next to Holland Park Station, but she wanted to go to Holland Park Station as well and pick up her kid. And I was like, I couldn't, like, I didn't care, like, to put the extra stop in, which might have, it didn't matter. Like, one, sorry, yeah, I'm sure I took into consideration she'd been at a funeral, that type of stuff. But, like, a bond in some respect had now taken place. Me getting an extra £5 or £10 like, by you picking extra stop in, I thought to myself, although I needed the money, it wasn't going to make a massive difference to me, but actually it might make a massive difference to you, because she was asking me in a way which, although she would have been happy to put it on, I think she would have preferred not to put it on. Do you know, am I making sense? Yeah.
This is slightly off topic, but do you know what? Back in the day, this always used to cheese man off. See, like when you get a cab, it might be you and your brethren, and it might be, you might be like, right, it's two stops, but the first, they're both the same direction. It's like, it's just like stopping at a red light on a traffic light.
Yeah.
And then a man will say, like, it's actually for £1.50 or £2 or whatever. I can't remember what it was, but I'd be like, bro, like, it's literally, you're not going out of your way. Yeah. You're en route. That used to pee me off, man. Big time.
Oh God. I was going to add to that, because one time, was it Barcelona? I don't know why Lawrence and even Oscar were around at the time. I don't know where we went. Yeah, I have no idea. But coming back, I didn't need to jump in a cab with them. I mean, I'd already got like a return ticket. I'm just assuming Barcelona. I'd already had a return ticket. It was Barcelona, sorry. Mm-hmm. So I had a return ticket, as I usually had. And I think, anyway, I had a return ticket. And I probably would have got back sooner than them in that. Anyway, they go, oh, you might as well jump in the cab. Jumped in the cab. Guy said, yeah, cool, no problem. The cab driver. Get to my first stop. Yeah, extra £15, £20, please. Bro, like, it's mad because obviously I was driving at the time. I just weren't having it. Weren't having it at all. I could be wrong, but I think they covered it in the end. But I was like, no conversation about this prior, and all of a sudden you just throwing, yeah, I got to pay extra £15. What are you talking? It made me mad also, because I had already had a train ticket, which would have taken me where I was going. I was like, no, I'm not paying that, man. If we had this conversation beforehand, no problem. So yeah, I've taken him off route, da, 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 da. But yeah, understand.
So empathy helps us learn the position the enemy is in, why the actions make sense to them, and what might move them. So that's where, okay, going back to the question, and you did kind of mention it because you mentioned about clients, but I was going to say, like, could it be someone that you've got no immediate, like, you've never seen them in your life? You've never seen them in your life.
So I can now hear, because someone had put this on mute, so I can hear now. Sure, you've been moving in and out.
No, but I haven't been. I've been here.
Yeah, I've been just looking at the wave, so I'm assuming.
No, I've been all right. So are you able to put yourself? Okay, so
it's hard.
But say so. Yeah. All right, so the easiest example would be like if you saw a news story.
I was gonna say, yeah, go on.
Yeah, like this child's gone missing or something like that, and like, could you put yourself in
the parents'
shoes or the family shoes and all them kind of thing?
Yeah, that in that scenario you've given, it's easier because obviously,
there's a child involved. So
exactly. But no, you can try, not try. You can put yourself in shoes, but it's not the same because it's not happened to you. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's not happened to you, so you. Yeah.
No. I agree with both things you said. I don't know why, because I think you've mentioned this before with another book where we're talking about a sports, someone who did, I want to say skiing, I could be completely wrong. I think the topic was as to, could we feel their disappointment from losing a competition or something along those lines? And I think my thoughts were yes, in some respects, because we've all lost.
You know what a loss feels like.
Yeah, we know what a loss feels like, but like speaking to what you're talking about as to like a child going missing and stuff like that. Like none of us have, we may understand in some respect how that feels, but we don't know how of that course. Feels. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which is a little bit different, but it's the same at the same time. But no, to answer your question, yes, I think more often than not, I think with some of these stories that come on the news or even shared on via social media, I think there is a sense of empathy. It's weird actually, because I think there generally is a sense of empathy, but also I think, I don't know, some of them, there's no emotional attachment. I don't know if it's because of social media or...
I was just going to say, when it comes to that social media shit, I don't give a fuck. Like, I don't care about it. Like, literally, I see tons and tons of stories, so it may sound kind of cruel, but when you hear about all these things, it's... Obviously, you have, from a human side of things, you never want to hear bad news. You don't want to hear about someone dying or some unfortunate event has happened. But because being bombarded by it constantly all the time, left, right and center, there's no, as you just literally mentioned, there's no emotional attachment to it, so therefore it's easy to just dismiss it. But that's kind of different in regards to that example, but also the same.
Just came to me as to like the, I'm thinking about, actually let me be dead honest, actually the ones that tend to happen in our community, because they're not on the big news, are they? You know what I mean? And with the ones with the news, you tend to, I guess there's more nuance, you know, so a story's, I don't want to say it's been put together, but there is a story, you know what I mean? And now you're invested in some respect, so you understand it. Very similar, like we used to watch Crime Watch, and we're invested in Crime Watch, and I'm not saying there was like, in a no, you know what I'm
saying? For the wrong reasons.
Yeah, for the wrong reasons, you know what I mean? But, I'm trying to think of a story that...
Spot the random word.
Yeah, but no, with social media. So I was literally only just thinking as we're speaking, because there's a lack of, not nuance, but there's a lack of information in some respects, whether it's hearing people talking, it's just a picture and text. You know, you're not, it's unfortunate, but like, again, just speaks to those things which we kind of take for granted, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, so labelling. We employed our tactical empathy by recognising and then verbalising the predictable emotions of the situation. We didn't just put ourselves in a fugitive's shoes. We spotted their feelings, turned them into words, and then very calmly and respectfully repeated their emotions back to them. In a negotiation, that's called labelling. Labelling is a way of validating someone's emotion by acknowledging it. Think of labelling as a shortcut to intimacy, a time-saving emotional hack. And that's on page 55. How do you think you'd react to this tactic?
Labelling.
Yeah. If someone was labelling your feelings.
So when you say it like that, it might annoy me. Oh, so you feel sad?
Yes. This is how I felt when I asked this question. I was like, that would piss me off. So.
But no, but when I was listening to it, because I know there was an example in the airport. I don't know if you're getting to that. It didn't come across like that. So, but if someone was labeling my feelings like that, it's different. So I can't remember the airport one specifically, but I remember thinking, I'm now beginning to understand.
Yeah.
But if someone was having a conversation with the car,
he finessed. Though.
Yeah, he did. Oh, fucking hell, man, fucking excellent.
we get into that anyway.
But if someone people definitely use this shit on me, actually.
Go on.
No, I'm talking about as to like, you've had a long day. Yeah, I know how it feels. Da da da. Yeah. You know, then you just.
Yeah. Definitely. That's building rapport.
Yeah. It's interesting. So I've even forgot the question. How do I feel?
Yeah. How do you think you'd react to this tactic?
The sad thing, as I was talking about before, I'm gonna try to find a way to end the conversation. But I mean, any other, I guess, use of the labeling, I think I'd open up. But yeah, the first one, the sad one, felt condescending a little bit.
That's the word I was looking for.
Condescending. Mm-hmm. Please don't use that tone with me.
Yeah. Sounds like you don't want to go back to jail today. Like, you're speaking to me like I'm a toddler. It's real talk though, isn't it? It sounds like I'm going to go back to jail today. Sounds like...
Yes, how do you think you would react to it?
Well, given the example, or the one example I just gave, that's just ridiculous. You can't be like
speaking to me like that, because it's just like you take, like you're speaking to me like, in a condescending tone. You're almost insulting me when you're doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it depends how it's being used.
There goes an example P you're talking about in regards to the airport. We can look into that a bit more further later on down the line, but in regards to straight off the bat, when I read that and I thought, if someone used that on me, as you said, rightfully so, it sounds condescending. Like, it seems that you're not happy, are you? Like, do you know what I mean? So,
therapist was the first thing that crossed my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they need to mind how they speak.
All right. Once you've spotted an emotion you want to highlight, the next step is to label it aloud. Labels can be phrased as statements or questions. The only difference is whether you end the sentence with a downward or upward inflection. But no matter how they end, labels almost begin with roughly the same words. It seems like, it sounds like, it looks like. That's on page 56. The last rule of labeling is silence. Once you've thrown out a label, be quiet and listen. Neutralize the negative. Reinforce the positive. Research shows that the best way to deal with negativity is to observe it without reaction and without judgment. Then consciously label each negative feeling and replace it with positive, compassionate and solution-based thoughts. And that's on page 59. Is it easier said than done when dealing with negativity?
To replace it with positive thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if I'm just referring to myself, it's much easier said than done, boy. It is much easier said than done. Sometimes I can wake up or something can pee me off first thing in the morning, and I can think all the positive thoughts, and I know how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like damn dog poop, boy. Damn doo doo. Yeah, it's much easier said than done, man. I think we discussed it before, but it's easier to get yourself in a negative or be in a negative space. It's harder to get out of that negative space than it is to get in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Could take one thing that can drop you down to that relegation zone.
Yeah.
drop you into that red zone. But it might take 6 or 7 things to build you back up.
How about yourself, P?
I just held on to that for a second or so. I mean, not that I didn't know, but I mean...
Silence.
Huh?
You're in the silence on me, yeah?
It's funny you said it, because I was thinking this book is beginning to grow on me, actually. I think the more we speak about it, because I was thinking, like, and with the course I recently did, the UX UI one, anything I see, so for example, even on my laptop, I look at how it's been constructed. I think, oh, that's poor UX, so it's blah, blah, blah. Whereas with this book, I'm now beginning to think of conversations and how they've been constructed as to the mirroring, the labeling, the silence, and other things. I don't even have names for them at this moment in time, but I'm now beginning to think of them a little bit more. But sorry, the question was... There's a lot that I wanted to say.
Every season. Every season.
The question was...
We'll never go a season without you saying that. Is it easier said than done when dealing with negativity? Do you want me to read...
No, that was... I knew that. I was just testing you. I think it is easier said than done... but I was thinking to myself, I like to look at the glass half full, than half empty. But then what Mason said had me thinking, you know, a little bit more as to, you know, the depletion and going down to the relegation zone. But it takes 6 things to get you get back up. I said, he's damn right, you know. That's what I was thinking. And that's what threw me off the question. I thought, he's right. But I've just not thought, you know, that deeply about it. One thing can ruin your whole fucking day. Someone not saying thank you after you let them go. You know. Almost forgot the question already. What was the bloody question?
You're taking a piss, isn't it?
No, I'm not. I've forgotten it. I think I've answered it, but... I'm trying my best to remember it. Even trying to peek over on that... It's about positive and negative. That's what I remember.
Oh,
shit, bro.
I think you've answered.
Just I have answered it, yeah. Just playing with everybody. Playing with the listeners.
Clear the road before advertising the destination. We do that by labelling the fares. These labels are so powerful because they bathe the fares in sunlight, bleaching them of their power and showing our counterpart that we understand. Where in society do we see this played out?
And the bleaching of the...
They bathe the fares in sunlight, bleaching them out of their power and showing our counterpart that we understand. There was...
Do you know what? I had a train of thought. Do you know when you're reading something and I just wrote the question? Yeah, there was a reason behind it and it's totally...
So can you read the whole thing again?
What we do... No, we do that by labelling the fares. These labels are so powerful because they bathe the fares in sunlight, bleaching them of their power and showing our counterpart that we understand. And the question was, where in society do we see this played out? And as I said, I had an answer and a reason behind the question, but it's totally eluded me. So if you don't understand it either, then I don't blame you.
The only thing I can think is where you'd see fears bestowed upon the general society. I feel politicians and government will put that out into the ether. Like, really, you know, amp up this level of fear and...
Yeah, so right now it's immigrants, you know, I was going to throw some nonsense in there. So the problem right now is the financial state of play in the country, the cost of living. Mm. All you're hearing now is immigrants, 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 immigrants. That's not the problem. I mean, there might be a small part of the problem, or there may be a problem there as to, I don't know... The one thing I think I've been hearing a lot of is immigrants are the ones who are the ones committing crime. Whereas I think the direct problem people are facing at this moment in time is the cost of living, you know? That speaks to what you were just talking about as to the bathing. Sorry, I'm thinking so deeply about it. I'm trying to understand the wordplay. I think politicians do that, as in pulling the wool over your eyes, you know? So I think that's one place we definitely see that. I think managers in football do that a lot of deflecting as to like their performances. So Alex Ferguson generally was very good at that.
Sir
that needs to be included.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely. Alex Ferguson, that was something he did a lot. I'm trying to think who else does that. I can't think of too many people in football at this moment in time.
Mourinho does it.
Yeah, oh God. But he's a bit annoying. But yeah. I've got a lot of respect for Mourinho, but when he does it, it's more like it's too much. Anyway, he does it. Mm. Do you know what? I think there's a lot of other managers that do it, but I think a lot of their emotion comes into it and it just goes all over the gaff. Like, I think of Rafa Benitez, you know, just someone who just goes off the handles. Like the what's the one, the famous one where he was talking to Ferguson? Facts. And just kind of, it's almost like he imploded. You know, he tried to do what we're talking about, like deflect something. And it's like, he's lost it, bro. He doesn't even know it. My man's gone. He's given the game away. He doesn't even know. We now know he's gone. This is a 2-horse race. Now it's clearly a 1-horse race. It's when? Anyway. They're the two examples. Football, I see in politicians. There might be another one as well, I'm sure. I'm sure they do it with stats as well. I think stats can be quite misleading as well. I think about it often as to, I don't want to use football. It's like, these weren't the stats I was thinking about. It might be, the most recent stat I think I saw today was, Saka scored, I think he's the only one, I think with 10 plus goals and assists in a season or something like that. And someone else may join him. That doesn't tell or speak to his story this season. You know what I'm saying? Or Odegaard, who's got, I don't know, 15 Premier League goals. That doesn't necessarily speak to his season, you know? It just tells part of the story. It doesn't tell the whole story. Oh, the big one, employment. I fucking hate that one. Sorry. I knew there was something else coming. Even I knew. Sorry. I knew, but I didn't know. Yeah. There was something else. Thinking, I know there's fucking something else.
Go for it. You're on the road.
Yeah, no, employment. So there's obviously, I talk about it in the book a lot as to like, I heard someone talk about this on the radio. I need to turn LBC off, actually. As to, because I've been flicking over recently. As to, you know, you may see like numbers or let's say record numbers of people in employment, but the gig economy specifically doesn't speak to, you know, people being the beneficiary of being in employment, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah, so stats don't quite necessarily, you know, it's not the tail of the tape.
Incredible.
Thank you.